of this parsha here is going to be based on the very, very first pasuk. So pay very close attention to this very first pasuk. It says, "Eila hadvarim." These are the words that your divar Moshe al kol Yisrael, that Moshe Rabbeinu spoke to Bnei Yisrael. The Eivra Yarden, on the other side of the Jordan River, by Midbar, by Arava, in the desert, in the wilderness, Molsuf, opposite the Yamsuf, in Parn and Tophel, between the cities of Parn and Tophel, the Lavan b'Chatzeros v'Dizahav, as well as the cities of Lavan, Chatzeros, and Dizahav. Says Rashi, all these cities represent a different chait, a different sin that Bnei Yisrael did when they were in the desert. Says Rashi, we mentioned Divrei Toichachos, Umonakan Kol HaMakomos. We mentioned all the places Sheikhisu L'tnei HaMakom that they are angered in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. L'Vigasotam is the Devarim. He closed the words off and he did not say them. They skirin Beremez Nekvod and Shei Yisrael, and he mentioned them in a hinting way out of the honor of Bnei Yisrael. He didn't want to say what they did wrong. He didn't want to say outright what they had done wrong. Now the Kedushas Levi starts off the parsha and he says the following: the Torah is written with stories throughout the first four Sfarim of the Torah. First four Sfarim, Bereishis to Bamidbar, there's stories all over the place. Sure, you take a break somewhat with Vayikra. There's a lot of laws in Vayikra, but Bereishis, Shmos, Bamidbar, all over the place, there's story after story after story. Every story has a pshat to them without a question, but there has to be a secret behind it, because there's got to be a reason as to why we're saying over this specific story in order to tell you something about the Avos. In pshat, it teaches people to act with Derech Eretz, how to have Midos Tovus, the proper Midos. Sometimes we're taught about Rishayim as well to tell you what not to do. We're told what Tzadikim do, what Rishayim don't do. Those are the ways we have to go. Sefer Devarim was written completely differently. There's not a single story over here. It's just Moshe Rabbeinu talking to the people, telling them what happened, and that's that. It's more direct way of speaking, which is not the way the Torah speaks ever. That's not the way we've seen in any of the others. That's why Devarim is known as Mishnah Torah. It's like a repetition of the Torah, but in a different way. It's a different way of speaking, says the Kedushas Levi, with more detail. This is because of the following: the generation that was around for the first four generation, for the first four Sfarim of the Torah, that generation left Mitzrayim. They needed help. They were slaves. There were people who didn't understand things properly. There were people who lived very, very harsh lives, and they came into the desert with Moshe Rabbeinu, and they just didn't get it. And until Chatzi Bamidbar, until halfway through the Sefer of Bamidbar, it's all them, and they mess up because they don't know how to act. They don't know how to do things. 40 days after Matan Torah, they can go ahead and do the Eagle Azov. They're complaining about everything. That's the way they were. That was that generation. They needed help. While this generation that was going into Eretz Yisrael was a perfect generation. They were going into Eretz Yisrael. They could hear the Torah without any levush, without any dressing around it, without any type of story to have to tell us. You could tell them it direct, and that's the way it is. And that's why it says the word Eile Hadvarim in the sixth parsha instead of the Eile, like it usually does. The Vav connects you the first four. No, this is different. Before was for the first generation. Eile Hadvarim, everything we talk about here is for this generation. Now that's still problematic. Here's the big problem. Chassam Sofer has so many questions. I'm sorry, we're going to first go with the Netziv. But we're going to see so many questions that have so many problems with this. The Netziv tells us like this. The Netziv tells us that until now, when Moshe Rabbeinu would teach them Torah by the All Moed, and they would go to him by the Mishkan, and they would all learn Torah, the Torah that he taught them was Halachos Psukos. He would tell them Halachos just like a Rambam. He would not tell them a reasoning. He wouldn't tell them where he got it from. They were just Halachos Psukos. Here's the Halacha. Here's the Halacha. Here's the Halacha. One after the other, that's the way they did it. That included all the Mishnayos. That included all the Halachos of Moshe Rabbeinu Mesinai. Halachos of Moshe Mesinai. He got all of those right then. They could then compare and contrast. The people's job over the desert was to compare and contrast. Let's see. Moshe Rabbeinu taught us this. God is telling us this. So if this happens to come up, well, that's more comparable to this case, so we'll paskin this way. And in that case, they would be able to do such a thing. And if they had a problem, they went to Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu, what do you say in a situation like this? What should we do? Should we go this way? Should we go that way? What's the luck in this case? We think like this. We think that this is comparable to this. What should we do? And Moshe Rabbeinu would paskin for them and say to them, here's the luck. That's the idea of what the Torah was like once they got over. And that would be even in future generations. When Moshe Rabbeinu was dead, they'd have other Gedolim and other Gaonim people that would be Gedolei Hador, and they would paskin the Shaila. They would tell them what to do. But Moshe had a lot more. Moshe Rabbeinu did not just get Halachos Psukos from Har Sinai. Moshe Rabbeinu got what's called the 13 Midos that the Torah is Midrash from. We say it every morning. Rabbi Yishmael Omer, B'shlosh Zeh Midos HaTorah Nidrash Hasban. I don't think any of you have ever done any of them. Maybe you've used a Kal V'Chomer in your life, but you've never made up a Gzer Shavah. You've compared things, but you've never made a gzeira shava. Klal uprat? Who in the world knows what a klal uprat is? Who's ever used it? Klal uprat u klal? Oh, how do you use it? We're lost. Out of the 13 of the different midos and the ways that you can darshan out the Torah, we get maybe one of them. Is that unbelievable? I'm sorry? Through the Gemara. But us ourselves, we don't use them at all. We've never used them. There are 32 other midos that are mentioned in the Yerushalmi. 32 midos, ways of being able to delve into the Torah to be able to understand what the Torah is trying to tell us. We don't do any of that. What happened? Says in its Siv, Moshe Rabbeinu was taught these 13 midos and 32 midos up on Har Sinai. These are the methods used to make chidushim and create new halachos and new things from the Torah itself. It's the ability to figure out all these drushes that we look at in the Gemara and we're like, where the heck did they get that from? Extra letters, gematrias, and all of a sudden you're going to come out with a crazy halacha? Stam Naziris. How long does a Nazir keep his Naziris for?
30 days.
Where do we learn that from? The word Nazir Yihyeh. Yihyeh is the gematria of 30. Nazir is the gematria, I don't know, it's 57, 8, 67, it's 267. Maybe it's 267 days. Because the gematria of Nazir is 267. Where in the world did they get it from the word Yihyeh from? Yihyeh is a verb. It's not even a noun. What kind of a drush is that? That's the concept of what they were being able to be taught. You can't make this up. You can't just pretend to know what you're talking about. You have to know what you're talking about. These methods were kept by Moshe Rabbeinu for 40 years. He never taught them to B'nai Yisrael. He never gave them over. He never said a thing to them. He didn't say anything. But at the end of 40 years, when he was already within the people's eyes, a gavel, he saw a generation that was going to Eretz Yisrael that was perfect, that was shalom, that was ready for such a thing. He went up to them and he told them, I have Tova Sain, I want to give you guys exactly what you need. I want to tell you how to learn these halachos. I want to show you where we got these halachos from. I want to teach you what it means to darshan out the Torah itself. This is what it means when it says, Kechol asher tziva oso Hashem oso alehem. Pasukim of Ayibar Boyushan on the 40th year, Bashtasar Chodesh Bakal the Chodesh, in Rosh Chodesh Shmat, Dibar Moshe of Israel, Kechol asher tziva Hashem oso alehem. Like everything that HaKadosh Baruch Hu commanded him, everything. He gave them everything he had. He taught them all the different drushos, all the different ways of making drushos. He taught them the way of doing such a thing. Including this, by the way, is Kabbalah. He had never taught them Kabbalah for 40 years. He had never said a word about what the sodos, the secrets of the Torah are. Even that, he did not tell to all the people in front of them. He knew they couldn't take it. He hid it from them and told it to them on the side so that not everybody would explain it fully, so there would be no Madonnas. The purpose of all this was the following. Why he waited until 40 years? When the decree was made that they'd be lost in the desert for 40 years, when that gezeirah was made, there would certainly have a period of gullus later on. There was going to be gullus. All of this idea of figuring out Torah by yourself, of learning it up in a derech called pilpul. All of these ideas are only there for a period of gullus. When we're in exile. What does that mean? This is a pshat. When the Beis HaMikdash is around, how do you find out the halacha? Does anybody remember what the Torah says about it? What? Urim Bitumim is not exactly correct, because remember, Lo Vashamayim, so you can't go to the Urim Bitumim, although in theory you could go to a Navi, because usually the guy is Shalom in Torah. But he has to get it not from HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. The Pasuk says, you go to Sanhedrin. The Kamta, the Alisa, El Amakom. You get up and you go to the place where Sanhedrin is. You go to the Beis HaMikdash, you ask Sanhedrin, you say, guys, what's the halacha? And Sanhedrin would tell you the halacha. That's what they were doing right by the Beis HaMikdash, so they'd have the siyata d'shmaya from a Kadosh Baruch Hu to be able to paskin correctly. That's what it was supposed to do. And we know we're so lost in this stuff. This is so far away from us because we have no idea how they used to learn back then. But this concept of learning was people would compare to one another. They wouldn't know anything else, and they would go to Sanhedrin and they'd ask Sanhedrin, what do you guys think? But when the Beis HaMikdash is gone, there's no Sanhedrin. There's no such siyata d'shmaya. So what are you supposed to do? So here's what Moshe Rabbeinu knew. Here's what Moshe Rabbeinu told them. Here are the methods. Now you can find experts who have perfected this knowledge. No longer is it a Navi or a man that's on Sanhedrin or a Kohen Gadol. No longer is that going to be the guy in charge. It's a Rosh Yeshiva. The head posek, the man who's going to be in charge of paskening halachos and tell everybody what the halachos should be, is no longer that guy, the guy that's all the way up, the spiritual high guy. It's the person who spends all of his time learning up these methods and spending his time sitting there learning Torah the entire time. This is the concept of a posek. That's where it all came from. And it's never going to be a little bit shlimy. Who started it? For over 1,200 years, the Jews continued. They knew what Pilpul was, but nobody used it. Nobody got involved in it. They had the Mishkan. They had a Beis HaMikdash. They never really needed it. So there were no yeshivos. There was no such concept as a chavrusa. They never had it. When people wanted to learn, they learned. They had a teacher, and a teacher expounded in front of many, many people. But there was no such concept of a seder, of learning it together, trying to figure it out, and then going to the Rebbe and hearing the Rebbe's shir on it. That didn't exist. Such a thing didn't exist. This, now, was what the Netziv says changed by the years of Yoshia. Anybody remember who Yoshia was? King of Yerushalayim, King of Yehuda. He found a Sefer Torah, says the Navi. And here's where a lot of people go off the derech and they become apikorsim. They say, oh, you see, there was no Sefer Torah in all of Klal Yisrael. Yoshia found the Sefer Torah. Here's why they're fools. He found the Sefer Torah. Meaning he found a certain Sefer Torah that was in the Beis HaMikdash. It was open up to a certain pasuk, and that pasuk was referring to a pasuk in Tokacha. That the Israel are going to be sent out of the nation. Yoshia saw through Nevuah, by seeing this Sefer Torah, that the Israel were about to go into Golos for the very first time since Moshe Rabbeinu took them out of Mitzrayim. Think about this, guys. They had been in an area where everything was good. Granted, there were times during the Shoftim where other nations had taken over for a little bit, but they had a Mishkan, they had a base to make us almost straight for 850 years. Yoshia gets up and all of a sudden realizes we're about to go into Golos. And they weren't prepared at all. They weren't prepared for anything. We see what happened. In Golos, in 70 years, most of Bnei Yisrael assimilated. They intermarried with all the Goyim and Bavel. It took 70 years. And only 35,000 people came back with Ezra Sofer. Nobody came back. 35,000 people. That's it. That's all the Jews that came back. That's crazy talk. They weren't ready for it. And Yoshia saw that. He said, oh no, what are we going to do? And he came up with a concept. We have to do something, and here's what Moshe Rabbeinu taught us. Use Pilpul. He made yeshivos. He made people sit and learn the chavrusa. He made people figure it out on their own. And when people got up and said, fine, so what's the halacha? Yoshia said, figure it out. Figure it out yourself. I'm not going to do it for you. I want you to figure it out. Use your own pilpul. Use your head. Be able to figure it out. This is more than just svara, logic. It's the ability to derive things from the Torah itself. And after Yoshia's time, right after then, became the greatest renaissance of Torah learning that we've ever had in our lives. Yoshia started it for everybody to be together, and that's the concept of the Chirish and the Misgar. There were Chirish and Misgar, which is Talmidei Chachamim, that went with them to Golos, who spent their entire time waging war while they were during Tov. Throughout Golos, there were great Nevi'im, we all know, right? Chagai, Zechariah, Malachi, Yirmiah, Yechezkel, Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah, Ezra, Nehemiah, Daniel, David, Shimon HaTzadik, Mordechai. We have crazy people that were alive. They formed what's known as the Anshei Knesset HaGedola. This forms the very first known Mishnah that we have. That Moshe Kibol Torah Misina, Misor Yeshua, Yeshua is a king, who's a king, Levim, Levim, who am I missing here? Nevi'im le Anshei Knesset HaGedola. V'heim amru shlosha devarim. They said three things. Right here, says the Netziv, is the key to all of Torah. Number one, have a mesunim bedin. Be slow to judge. Says the Netziv, what that means is don't base yourself on logic alone. Discuss the halakhas that you have so you make sure you're getting it correctly with other people. Do it slowly. Have a chavrus alone with a Rebbe and get it together so that you can figure out exactly the method and how to use it and how to be able to get it. Then came Hamidu Talmidim Harve. Set up a lot of Talmidim, a lot of students. Set these ideas become more concrete and popular throughout everywhere so everybody can take it wherever they go. That's the idea of having Talmidim. And then Asu Siyogim Latayro. Make your Chidushim. And they did. Durabanans were made one after the other, after the other, after the other, to make sure that nothing would be lost from Klal Yisrael. And to us, it's just like, well, why'd they have to add that on? We didn't need something like that, but we did. If we didn't have it, who knows what would have happened with the original Doraisas. And that was the problem. Malachi, who is probably Ezra Sofer, according to the Gemara, realized this throughout the entire second Beis Hamikdash, while it was going on, that the second Beis Hamikdash would have been built, but it wasn't going to be the same. No longer was there going to be that. So Ezra Sofer started the period of the Tanayim. He told them, learn, guys. Learn. Make yeshivos. Create a concept called zugim. No longer would one rabbi be in charge. Instead, two rabbis are going to be in charge. It's going to be Antigonus Yisoko with other people. It's going to be Shimon HaTzadik with Antigonus Yisoko. It's going to be Yoshua ben Prachya and Itar Bailey. It's going to be Shammai and Hillel. Shammai and Avtalion. They're going to be together. There's going to be chavrusas. There's going to be people discussing so that we can come up with a concept of pilpul to where it just exploded by the times of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai and Rabbi Akiva. This this is the whole concept of Torah, all built up based on this Shlomo Melech talks about it. He calls it Eitz Chaim here. A tree is an apropos type of idea that you can use for Torah. It has roots in the ground, which is the Torah, the basics of what a Kodesh Baruch Hu based on, and then you can build up your tree. We have the ability to darshan. We have the ability to build up on top of things that our previous ancestors have said. You have to build it up on top of the Shach, on top of the Pnei Yoshua, on top of Rashi and the Rambam. Making your own little sapling is nice. To say your own little vort in the Torah and to make your own little sapling is nice. But to stand on top of a tree of Torah and make another branch or another thing, it might be a little twig hanging off the tree with a tiny little leaf, but at least you're on the tree. That's the concept of Torah learning, says Ezra Sofer. It's all based on Moshe Rabbeinu teaching them Pilpul, which is what they said. And here's the pshat. Moshe Rabbeinu could only tell this over to Bnei Yisrael after Sichon and Og died. Because Shmaitza Boyitze Lusa. To learn correctly, you need to be calm. You need to be clear. It has to be after they fought Sichon and Og, where there's no scares anymore. They're not worried about any other nation. They're going to be able to do everything. And that's what it means when it says that he taught them Be'er Heitev. Be'er Yarnab Eretz Moab Hoil Moshe Be'er Heitev. He was able to explain it to them well. Explain to them what the Torah means and how you're supposed to come about it, so that you don't need me anymore. You can paskin for yourselves. You can figure out exactly how to do it by using these types of things. This is the concept. And now you can understand, well, that's another concept altogether. It was taught in a very, very small manner. You learned halachos, you memorized them. You looked at the Rambam, and you went through the Rambam one by one. That was the concept. Obviously, the Rambam wasn't around. But you learned the halachos, you just memorized halachos. But the derivation, where we got it from, was not important to them. The Tanoim were the ones that put it on, and after the period of the Tanaim and Amoraim, it got lost again. We lost it. And now there's barely anyone around who can do pilpul today, true pilpul, in looking at the Torah and deriving what to learn from every letter. I don't even know if any of you have ever met somebody like that. Have you ever met somebody who doesn't even look at a Gemara? Just looks at the Torah itself. He knows the Gemara so well he doesn't need it, so he looks through the Torah and figures it out. It's like going through a Torah Tamima. Have you ever been through the Sefer Torah Tamima and figure out the derivations from the Torah itself? It's ridiculous. You have to be a brilliant, brilliant man to start off the way and then build yourself up. That's the concept. And it's almost impossible for us today. Says in the Tziv, that's what he told them in this week's Parsha. However, we got to go into something. He gave them Musa, right? So he gave them Musa Berenes. Guys, what is he talking about? He hinted them what they had done wrong? The whole Parsha is what they did wrong. You guys are a bunch of fools. Anyway, and you told me to get the Meraglim. And that didn't work out so well. You all died in the desert. And then he complained, and I hated you for it. And it was because of you that I don't get to go with Eretz Yisrael. And then we defeated Og and Sichon, and then things were all good. The whole parsha is about that. And then next week's parsha mentions the Egel Azov. He goes into what they did wrong. Where's the Ramazim? There's no hints. You're trying to tell me that he's telling it the remes? What does that mean? Aside from that, why are you hinting it to them? When you're giving Musar to somebody, so you go up to a guy and let's say, I don't know, we'll just see, Dan, okay, you broke Shabbos, right? So I go up to you and be like, how was your tzitzis the other day? It was great. No, I mean your tzitzis. But is that going to work? Can you see the picture? You don't give those types of things in Ramazim. It doesn't happen that way. It's silly. The guy's not going to get it. If you're going to give them Musar, get up in front of them, and most of them, you're an important person, you've been their leader for 40 years or about to die, get up in front of them and say, guys, you're a bunch of fools. You shouldn't have done this, you shouldn't have done that. What would have been wrong with that? And in the end, he did do that. So he's going to tell them Beremes? Why does it have to be in a hinting way? What is this? The Midrashim go crazy with praise over Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu was the only person who knew how to give Musar. What do you mean he knew how to give Musar? How did he give it that was different from everyone else? What does this mean? Says the Chassam Sofer. Normally, if you want to give Musar, you're right, exclusively works. But not always. If the person is going to go further off when you go up to them and tell them you're a fool, you did something wrong, then the way to do it to them is you have to do it nicely. You go up to them and be like, you make them understand. Rabbi Reuben Levinson, my old 6th grade Rebbe from Ari Crown, has these little sheets that they hand out everywhere. So I don't know if this would work now. I've never, I'm going to doubt it. Maybe it was just a different time back then. but in Panovich, when the Panovich Rav made his yeshiva. So he says that the Panovich Rav, there was a lot of rooms that were dirty. Yeshiva Bachram or Yeshiva Bachram. Clothes on the floor, stuff everywhere. It was disgusting. It looked like, you know, it felt like a typical dorm room. So the Panovich Rav asked his Rebbetzin, what should I do? How do I fix this? What can I tell the Bachram? So the Rebbetzin was a very, very smart woman. She said, I got an idea. She hired workers to come in and clean up all the stuff, to make everything clean and to make everything nice and whatever it is. And then afterwards, she took flowers. She put them in pots, and she put them throughout the dorms. And she showed the boys, these are going to be your flowers. Now, who would mess up a room that has flowers in it? So nowadays, everyone. But then, they just said, maybe they'd never seen a flower before. It's possible. But they were so happy to have it, they used to water it and keep it, and they'd say, oh, it's the Rebbetzin's flowers, the Rebbetzin's flowers. The Rebbetzin didn't care. The Rebbetzin never came back. It's a boy's dorm. She's not going anywhere near there. She did that in a way. If you do it correctly, you'll be able to correct the wrongs in the right way. You just have to know what to do. Here's what Moshe Rabbeinu was afraid of. He looked at Yaakov Avinu, and Yaakov Avinu waited till the end of his life to give muster to Klal Yisrael. When he saw the Shvatim, they had done things wrong. There's no question the Shvatim did things wrong. He waited until he was dying, to the very end of his life, to give them muster to be able to send them down. That's what Yaakov Avinu did. Why? Because he was worried. If I give them muster too harshly beforehand, they might go to Esav. And I can't let them go to Esav. So he wouldn't give them muster so badly. He gave them muster for remez. The remez in different ramos. And at the end of his life, that's when he did it explicit. And that's exactly what Moshe Rabbeinu did. Now, let's look at this parsha again. Says the Chasam Sofer, for 40 years, Moshe Rabbeinu always gave them muster for remez. He gave them hints, showing them what they had done wrong and how they could correct it. For 40 years he did that. And at the very end of his life, when he was dying, that's when he got up and said, you guys are a bunch of fools. How could you have done this? He always gave up remez, but not anymore. And this is how you read the parsha. In those places, he gave it to them remez. That's when he gave it to them remez. But then, by Yibar Boim Shana, in the 40th year, like everything, says the Chasam Sofer, the Musar explicitly came out from him. This is the pshat of trying to get around something, and this is the idea. This is an amazing remez. You know, Eila Hadvarim is a remez for the 39 Malachos of Shabbos? Eila Hadvarim. Eila is the gematria of 36. Devarim is 2. Hadvarim is an extra hay for a third. 36 plus 3 is 39. Is that unreal?
Devarim is 1 of Devarim.
Eila is 36. Devarim is 2 things. Plural things. I'm sorry, I didn't explain that. Yeah, Devarim is not the gematria of 2. And then Ha, the hay, is an extra 1. Either way, it's an unbelievable... Where in the world did that come from? Eila Hadvarim. All of a sudden you got 39 malachas and Shabbos? What does this have to do with Shabbos at all? Where in the world does Shabbos come from? Says the Chasam Sofer. He thinks the Ikar Remez is not about Shabbos. And it was a mess up. The Ikar Remez is that these things were given as muster for 39 years. For the first 39 years in the desert, Eile Hadvarim. These were the words that he gave throughout the entire time that he gave it to them, Beremez. In the 40th year, by Yibar Boim Shana, in that 40th year, that's when he gave them the Musar explicitly, and that's what it ended up being. That's the concept behind it. Why is such a concept? Okay, but that wasn't my real good one. That wasn't my crazy Chasam Sofer. If you thought anything, this is the Chasam Sofer that if you don't die after hearing this, you're not Jewish. And it's possible, you might have like some sort of a soul. I mean, it's possible because all animals have a nefesh. But if you have a ruach, right, and especially if you have a neshama, you're going to hear this, you're going to go absolutely batty. You should be bouncing on the floors, hitting your head. That's what should happen to you after hearing this word. This is one of the greatest. I read it, and I read it again, and I was like, there's no way you just said that. And then I died, and then I came back. It was unbelievable. Says the Chasam Sofer, the best. In Parshas Baloscha, I pulled this up, right? This is like expectations for the Bears this coming up season. If they don't win the Super Bowl, like, you're gone. Like, if this isn't the best part ever, you're gone. But it is. They claimed that they ate meat and fish when they were in Mitzrayim. That's what they claimed. And they said to Moshe Rabbeinu, we remember when we had meat and fish back in Egypt. Okay. That's what they said. And that was not in this week's Parsha. That was back in Parsha Balo. So they mentioned the fish, and we have meat from another place. They mentioned meat and fish, and we remember when we had that back in Mitzrayim. And they claimed, we rather would have died then than died now in the desert. Rather would have died then in Mitzrayim than died now in the desert. Okay. What does that mean? How does that work exactly? Fish? How did they have fish in Mitzrayim? Well, that's from a Medrash. Medrash said they brought buckets out to their husbands full of water for them to be able to drink in the middle of the day when it was so hot in Egypt. And in the water, they found little fishies. There were little fishies that came, spontaneous generation. So you see it exists. Inside the water itself. And they went in and they took the fish and they ate the fish. So they had fish in Mitzrayim. That I get. Fine, that's good. Where did they have meat? When did Bnei Yisrael ever have meat in Mitzrayim?
What do you mean?
I'm sorry?
Bnei Yisrael were all shepherds.
Not during the time they were slaves. For the 210 years, or 86 years when they were slaves, they did not. Now granted, they had that, but they remember the meat that God gave them. It's korban pesach. They're trying to say, no, we remember the meat that we had in Mitzrayim. You know, when we were in Mitzrayim, we loved the meat. What kind of meat did they ever have? They were never served meat. Why would they have been served meat? They were slaves. So what does that mean? So here's the pshat. Okay. It's not that they were saying we'd rather be in Mitzrayim. Bava Basra, Chasam Abay, says that the worst punishment a person can get, worse than death, is captivity. Death is better than captivity. Because death, at least it's over. In captivity, you never know when you're getting out, especially back then. The jails were holes in the ground, you're living with rats. And you starved to death. You literally starved and you thirsted to death. That was it. So captivity is worse than any other punishment. Being slaves in Egypt is worse than anything else. They couldn't mean that we'd rather die in Egypt as slaves rather than die now of starvation or thirst. That can't be. Still, slavery would have been worse. So that's not what they meant. We're missing something. They were saying, we should have died during Makas Choshech. What happened during Makas Choshech to the Jews? Come on. Four fifths of Bnei Yisrael passed away. They said, we would have rather died during Choshech than die now in the desert. Okay, guys. Why did the four fifths of Bnei Yisrael die in Makas Choshech?
They didn't want to go out.
They didn't want to go out. What do you think they were thinking at the time? Bnei Yisrael just saw a massive massacre that had not even occurred to the Egyptians. Over the Egyptians, the first nine Makos, there wasn't that many deaths. Yeah, people died because Dam is disgusting and Tzvardeh, you know, castrated them and Kenim went into their eyes. And okay, Arov, there were wild animals, but there weren't that many deaths. Four-fifths of Bnei Yisrael died? That's worse than the Holocaust. If you have 3 million people that left, and you have 15 million people, 12 million people died. Can you imagine that? 12 million Jews died in one night. Or three nights, I should say. In Makas Choshech. How in the world did the Jews survive that? Why didn't they look up at God and say, what the heck? You're trying to save us? You just killed off our entire nation. Four-fifths of us are dead. To that point where Schwab says, it wasn't really four-fifths. There's the famous word of, we didn't even know there were Jews. They looked like Egyptians. But they were really Jews. There were Jews that intermarried. There's words that come out from that. But it's a Pella. Four-fifths of an Israel died and the Jews were okay with that? They were burying their dead for 3 days straight? And they came out of that and they said, all right, we're ready for the Korban Pesach. How does that make any sense at all? It says Chasam Sofer. You always try to find a natural answer behind everything. So what was the natural answer behind this? After the Holocaust, people went and they were starving, all the Jews that were in all the DP camps, wherever they went. So what did the American soldiers do? Out of the kindness of their hearts, they took out all the food and all the rations they had and gave it to the starving Jews in each one of these displaced camps. They killed many, many Jews. Because when your stomach contracts to the point where it cannot take normal food anymore because you haven't been fed normal food, and then all of a sudden you feed yourself all these great rich foods, your stomach bursts and you die. Here's what they thought. The Jews, for the first time ever during Makas Choshech, were able to go and get food from their Egyptian oppressors. It was dark. The Egyptians couldn't move. And what everybody assumed is that the Jews ran to the people's Egyptians' houses, took food, meat, fish, all the good foods, the sweet foods that they had in Egypt, grabbed them and started eating them. And what happened to them? They all died. A natural death. They all assumed that they died a natural death. And when they saw four-fifths of Bnei Yisrael died, they weren't mad at HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they were mad at the people. What were you doing? You should have eaten slower. Your mother tells it to you all the time. They might have gone swimming afterward, and that would have killed anyone. I mean, you never know what's going to happen. That's what they thought. They thought it was a natural death, not a supernatural death. They thought that that's what they did. And that's what happened. And when the Egyptians saw the four fists of an Israel die, even though they were busy, who knows if they saw anything at all, they were mourning themselves. But either way, when they saw that, they also looked at it as, oh, poor Jews. They shouldn't have eaten so quickly. It was a natural idea of what must have happened. Only later on, when they received the Torah, did a Kadosh Baruch Hu say, oh, by the way, it's because you lacked emunah. And they didn't want to leave. And they were like, oh, it wasn't because they ate too much? No, they didn't eat anything. They just died because of the lack of emunah. And that's when they realized, like, oh, Kadosh Baruch Hu really does know what we're doing. And he really does pay attention to every single person. But they had no idea. The exact same thing happened in Shittim. People, this is amazing. There is a plague going on. The Medrash says very straightforward. People were dying from Shevet Shimon all over the place because they were sleeping with the daughters of Midian. And the people of Shimon came to Zimri and said, Zimri, what are you going to do? How are you going to stop this death? And what did Zimri do? He grabbed Cusbi, brought her in front of Moshe Rabbeinu and said, Moshe, is she mutter or aser? Moshe Rabbeinu said, I can't tell you. And he grabs her and starts sleeping with her. Guys, what in the world? Why would Zimri do that if he already saw a plague was starting from them? Why would he do the exact same thing? What was he thinking? Why would anyone from Shevet Shimon continue doing what they were doing if they saw that it was causing deaths? They didn't think that was the reason for their deaths. What did Shevet Shimon do? The people that were so used to the Mon and the Be'er Shel Miriam went into the tents of Midian. And what did they find there? An old woman on the outside and a very young pretty woman on the inside. And the young pretty woman fed them meat and made them drink wine. So what did the Jews think when they came out and started dying? It's not God punishing them for sleeping with Benos Midian. It's mutter to sleep with Benos Midian. And that's what Zimri was trying to prove. Sleeping with the Benos Midian is not the problem. That's not the issue, because I'll show you. I'll sleep with the daughter of Midian and I'm not going to die. You know what the problem is? You eat too much meat and you drink too much wine. That's going to kill you. That's going to kill you. It bursts your stomachs, and that's what happened to you. They assumed it was a natural death. That's what ended up happening to them. So all of Bnei Yisrael looked at Zimri and thought, oh, I guess it isn't the woman. Because you see, Zimri's not dying. Zimri's not dying in the plague. How come he's not dying in the plague? Must be it's not the woman. It's that, says the Kadosh Baruch Hu. No! The reason why Zimri's not dying is because I want Pinchas to do this to stop the plague. And exactly, Pinchas was the only person who realized it. Pinchas was the only person who picked up on it and went there. Here's what Bnei Yisrael were saying. We'd rather have died back in Mitzrayim eating that food and drink, overeating and overdrinking and dying that way, than dying by starvation in the middle of the desert. That was their vort. That was their idea. And that's what they said. We'd rather have died then when we would now. That's what they were trying to say. This concept is hinted to in the Parsha by the words Bamidbor Ba'arava, says the Chasam Sofer. How they died in the desert, how they died in the wilderness. What they were supposed to do then. This is the concept. It is an absolute unreal pshat. I cannot explain to you how unbelievable that is. That really explains exactly what happened during Choshech and why they didn't complain. It explains what happened during Shittim. Those three. Our summary is, Pilpul was taught to Bnei Yisrael to help them get through Gullus. That was the whole point of Pilpul. Number two, Musar through hints versus Musar explicitly. It's always better to say it explicitly. That's number two. Number three, the fish and the meat in Egypt during Makas Choshech was the way of them figuring out. They thought that their death happened through there, but really it was through their lack of emunah, and really it was through the fact that they were together with the Benos Midian. HaKadosh Baruch Hu always surrounds his miracles with natural reasons that if a person wants to, he could point to the reasons and say, that's what happened, it's just a coincidence. But the real people who learn Chumash and go through it understand it is 100% HaKadosh Baruch Hu all the way through. I'm going to stop with that, guys. Have a good Shabbos.